weighing us in to episode 8 of Goodnight Sweetcast, Betty Johnson's version of Goodnight Sweetheart from her 1959 album, The Song You Heard When You Fell in Love.
It's a very nice song.
Did you fall in love while listening to it?
Nope. I refuse to fall in love.
This week we're going to be talking about episode 2 of series 2 of Goodnight Sweetheart, which is called I Got It Bad and That Ain't Good, named after the Duke Ellington song. We had a little listen to the Nina Simone version before we started recording here, just to put us in the mood. Have we got any business to attend to before we start talking about episode 2? I don't think we have.
Business? No.
We've been quiet.
We've been off the radar.
We have. We've been a little bit erratic in our release schedule.
That's your fault.
And it's all my fault. We've been looking at the time consumption to make this podcast and our other podcast, Wiki Shuffle, which you can find at all good podcast outlets. Mm-hmm. To make this task a little bit more obtainable for us, we're going to be changing the release schedule a little bit. So from now on, Goodnight Sweetcast is going to be released fortnightly. Mm-hmm. And so is Wiki Shuffle. So we're going to do alternate weeks. One week we'll be doing Goodnight Sweetcast, and one week we'll be doing Wiki Shuffle.
You should definitely listen to both.
So we'll be back once a fortnight. That way we will be doing this for the next 2 years.
Have you just extended it?
Yeah, that's the consequence of this decision. It makes it more manageable, but stretches out the process. What a journey it will be.
I like that we've just condemned. It's like their sentence. Well, 2 years now.
If I'd just got my act together and edited in a timely fashion, we could have got this over like ripping off a plaster.
Exactly.
Could have got it done quickly, but no, we're prolonging the pain
and
for everybody involved.
You didn't send us any erotic fan fiction, then you brought this on yourselves. Shame on you.
There's still time. Do send in your submissions to the Gary Lurie, to our Twitter at GNScast or via wikishuffle.co.uk. Let's plunge right in to this episode. We had a riot of a time watching this episode.
This was a funny episode. I like this one.
We said it before, the tone of the show shifts up a gear in series 2, and it becomes a lot more fun for everybody involved. Everybody's clearly more comfortable with the premise, and this is just a great fun episode, albeit with some morally questionable aspects, but we'll cover that in more detail as we get there. So we'll be going through in chronological order through the episode. As always, we advise that you watch the episode before listening to our nonsense about it.
Also, I believe these ones, series 2 isn't like one you can find on YouTube, so you might have to do some alternate internet digging.
The whole series is being re-screened on the Yesterday channel at the moment. It was on Forces TV up until recently, but
Forces
it's not
TV.
The Armed Services channel.
They have their own channel.
Although they were showing all the episodes in a very random order. Your best bet is to go and get a copy of the DVD.
So just Goodnight Sweetheart, Ultimate Force with Ross Kemp. is that all it shows?
Yeah, I think so.
On what channel? I know, I'm not saying the Armed Forces. They need Telly too. I just don't know why they can't share with the rest of us.
The British Forces Broadcasting Service provides radio and television programmes for Her Majesty's Armed Forces and their dependents worldwide. Editorial control is independent of the Ministry of Defence and the armed forces themselves. That's good that we're not paying the military to put on a TV show. I don't think we want to be encouraging a state military TV channel. It's not like a recruitment thing. And if it was, Gary Sparrow would be a very poor ambassador.
Exactly. Ross Kemp would be the best one. This morning, I accidentally woke up at like 6 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, which is careless and annoying, and went into the living room and just put the telly on. And they were showing all of the week's Emmerdale at 6 in the morning on ITV.
Who's that for?
I have no idea. Who wants that on a Saturday morning? Bucket of Emmerdale.
The 6 a.m. Emmerdy bus.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what they wanted. I watched some of it, though.
How was it?
Good.
We're not talking about Goodnight Sweetheart, though, which is what we're supposed to be talking about. That's what people are tuned in for. They want to know what Gary's up to. We're in 1994, remember, in the modern day, and we're in 1941 in the past. The overriding theme of this week's episode, erectile dysfunction.
Yep. That's what the whole thing seemed to be about. It gives you a bit of insight into Gary. I think it just makes you think he's a bit nicer than the premise of the show suggests. It's like there's something going on in his brain. It's a psychological thing.
The original implication is that Gary wants to get his leg over with anything that's moving, but now he's stopping and having a think about it, and his subconscious is catching up with him a little bit.
It's took a bit of time.
It's taken a good while, because we're a year into his exploits.
But it's a clear indication of his preference. Because he says he loves both these women. He doesn't. He loves one of these women, and the other one he's just lives with and is married to, and it's awkward and complicated to get out of. He doesn't love Yvonne. He's just settled with her, duty bound. And his penis knows that. His penis has got more of a sense of morals than the rest of him.
The bar isn't set high.
No. But it's the only occasion I can think of where he should think with his pants. His pants are making the right decision. This is what you should do. That's what they want, and it's right. Go with that.
Listen to your little fella.
Listen to him.
So we open up with Gary cleaning his teeth.
Ooh, like a weird Jedi in that horrible dressing gown.
He's got his dressing gown on. You know, the one that matches his favourite rugby shirt.
A Christmas set. Red top bit. It's got a hood on it. And he's got it sort of loose so you can see his Gary pecs. It's just gross. And I bet he's one of those people that when they brush their teeth, they just get it everywhere. Just everywhere. All over his face. All over that dressing gown. When everyone's got an eye on the oven mitt, then she's got to get all the bits of detritus of Gary's Jedi robe.
They've got an ensuite bathroom, which I hadn't really thought about. But we have seen the ensuite bathroom before.
Yeah, right from the beginning.
That feels like it would have been quite the luxury in the early 90s.
That's a shot they've used before as well, where Gary's been looking in the mirror, and then behind him you can see Yvonne just sort of slouching on the side of the bed. That's her side of the bed. She's the right side of the bed. Mm-hmm. He's the left side of the bed, closest to the door. Do you think it's how people do it?
What?
Isn't there a thing about people who sleeps closest to the door?
Is the one that wants to bolt out of the relationship?
I don't know, maybe. Maybe I've just made up a thing.
Yeah. Examine your own sleeping patterns.
Yeah.
If your significant other has chosen the side of the bed that's closest to the door, then they're probably having an affair with a barmaid in the 1940s.
Sorry.
It just seems to be based on all the statistical evidence that we've been able to accumulate.
And if you are the person that is sleeping on that side of the bed and you're listening to this, yeah,
your subconscious is telling
shame,
you
shame on you.
Yeah, that you want to bolt, that you want to be out of there.
But what we're also saying with this analogy is that there's no right way to sleep, and you have to sleep sort of top tail all the time.
No couple can ever be equally happy. That's the inevitable end point of that train of thought. Yvonne wants to sell the house. She wants to move to Maple Avenue,
the nice part of town, and she wants to have babies.
Her clock is ticking.
She's fertile. She's ready. Gary, I'm ready.
She doesn't mince her words here. It is the day of her peak fertility.
The moon is in the right position.
Virgo and Sagittarius are aligned.
I think that's weird, isn't it?
How it works.
It's weird, isn't it, how it cycles.
Gary's feeling under pressure by all this pressure.
Self-inflicted pressure, though.
And confesses that he's having, not to put too fine a point on it, he's having trouble putting too fine a point on it. I don't know whether or not a fine point is the really what you're going for.
It's a triangle penis.
So Gary's feeling under pressure. He can't perform in the bedroom.
Well, he says he's not in the mood.
And then he suggests that it's more than just not being in the mood. And certainly in the next scene, he says so much explicitly to his best friend and confidant, Ron.
Where does he decide to...
This is amazing. This next bit was the most that Chris and I have laughed at a single bit of Goodnight Sweetheart.
It's so random. This is completely out of the blue. There's no reason for them to be doing this.
We laughed at it so hard we had to stop the DVD for a bit so that we could regain our composure, because it was so genius. And it was so well done because they didn't feel the need to explain, and it was obviously ridiculous what was happening, but they just left it alone, and that's what made it all the funnier. For some reason, Gary and Ron are on a date. There's no other way of describing
what it is.
They're on a date.
They're in the middle of a lake on a rowing boat, like the owl and the pussycat.
On a romantic get-together on a rowboat in some sort of leisure park.
Just in the middle, just rowing.
This is where they've gone to spend their time together.
It's where they do all their secrets.
Ron's got himself a cornetto.
Gary probably treated him to it.
You imagine so? It made him very happy.
Well, Ron was getting treated because Ron wasn't doing any of the rowing. Gary was doing all the rowing. So you can see that Gary must have picked him up, said, Ron, I'm taking you out on this date. We're going to have a day. Go get you a cornetto, and then we'll book a boat for a couple of hours, go in the middle, and then I'll tell you all my problems.
So I'll get you trapped. Yeah. And then you've got to listen to me whining on about my two girlfriends.
I just like it. It's quite sweet. It's quite a sweet little friendship that they've got.
I mean, we've been friends for a good while now. We've never done this.
Then we should. We can.
There are some rowboats.
Wixty Park has boats. Let's go do that then.
Let's record some Goodnight Sweetcast from the boating lake.
We can do that.
It's Can we wait till the summer? Because it's bloody freezing.
It'll be a bit more like we're dumping a body if we do it now.
Yeah, next summer we'll see about maybe recording some Good Night Sweetcast from a boating lake. From a television production point of view, this was certainly not the easy choice because they've done some outside recording for this, which is quite complicated, recording on a boat compared to just doing it in a set, which they could easily have done.
Because they could have just done it in Gary's kitchen, which is a set they've already got. Favourite scene, though. I liked it.
Spoilt somewhat by Gary's admission that he can't get anything going on south of the navel.
Yeah, it's odd.
It's conjuring images that we maybe didn't need. So after their rowing boat, they retire to a... I've written in my notes, weird cafe.
Is that like it's a river cafe? Yeah, where river folk go.
That makes it sound too nice.
Oh, it's, no, it wasn't nice. Yeah, it was
very... like a little greasy spoon by a boating lake. You can picture the kind of thing we're talking about. And if you've seen the episode, you know exactly what we're talking about. Mm. You know, the kind of thing that's got a slush puppy machine. They'd sell ice creams predominantly. You
smell
can get
a
cup
damp.
Of tea. Oh, definitely smell a bit damp. They've got the furniture's not the nicest. They've got those plastic tables and chairs that they have to put in and take out every day. Here it looks even more like they're on a date. Certainly to the woman behind the counter.
She was enthralled. She was really into this love story that was unfolding before her eyes.
Ron gets a chance to be his insightful self because what Ron is good at is getting to the point of the problem and understanding what's happening, and Gary's not good at this and he needs Ron to fulfil this role. And so Ron points out that all of this, it's probably not physical, although there are means of testing if it's a physical problem.
And he's got a cousin.
He's got a cousin who does such testing. Yeah. And he's seen videos. That was quite funny. It was just a funny episode. It was fun. Everything about it was just fun. It didn't feel... In the first series, when things like this were happening and Gary was doubting himself a bit, it all had a tendency to get a little bit morose and a little bit too reflective. Mm. It doesn't wallow in that at all in this. They just get on with it. And so Ron says, sort of matter-of-factly, well, this is really psychological. This is your little fella telling you that what you really want is to be with Phoebe. Mm. And Gary at one point even accidentally says Phoebe's name, which is very telling, if not very subtle. And so Ron points this out and says, the only option is you've got to go back and find out. That's not technically the only option, though, is it? There's another option where...
It must be another option.
You talk it through with your wife.
But that's not the one I would go for. But we said this before, my decision is Yvonne would have been gone. I would have left her immediately. This is why it's not, my life isn't a series. Because... The whole Yvonne, this is memory. I've accepted that I'm from the 40s and I'm a rock star.
They effectively decide he's going to have to go back to the 1940s again, even though he said he wasn't, just to test out his growling loins, was the phrase used.
Yeah, growling.
Yeah, we're using the phrase growling loins and we're just going to make out like that's okay. And
was that a popular thing to say?
I can't remember having ever used those words together.
I can't remember my loins growling. Does it sound... I'm sorry.
Gary's cave troll loins. When we go back to... This is another odd scene, but it's really fun and likeable. Mm. And it says an awful lot about 90s sensibilities as well. So Gary, having made the decision to that he is going back to the 1940s again, he goes back home and he interrupts Yvonne showing a couple around the house because she's trying to sell it.
Yeah.
And the couple are Frederick and Joe.
Frederick is... He seems like he's like beaten often. He's a bit shaky, a bit nervous, as opposed to the master.
Joe... Yeah. Is the world's most dour gay person. He's a very unnecessarily dour man.
Even when Yvonne says, oh, and when we're selling the house, you can keep the curtains and carpets. To be fair, he is right. He's like, I'd rather not.
But there's a nicer way of putting that. You can be more polite than that. You don't need to be quite that dour. Yvonne's obviously very aware that this is a gay couple.
Clocked on pretty fast.
She has. But she doesn't know how to deal with this.
Yeah, which must have been a 90s thing.
I think it was. I think this is very true to how a lot of people were then, and I think to a certain extent are now, where the next step in accepting and understanding that, you know what, people are gay and that's okay and it doesn't affect my life at all and that's going to happen even though I'm a heterosexual person. The next step in between that is saying, this is fine, but I've not got any experience of really dealing with this, and I don't want to offend you, and at the same time, I'm going to totally misjudge what is offensive to you. So Yvonne says, in reaction to Gary having been out with Ron, oh, you two are having an affair, and then she immediately takes it back as if she said the worst thing imaginable, as if that in some way is going to cause an offence to these to this gay couple that somebody else in the world might be gay.
It must have been quite... got an experience being gay in the mid-90s because everybody was terrified of you. they didn't know why. They were just trying so hard not to offend you. And they didn't want to.
And I don't think that's gone away yet. We're certainly not past that.
No.
And there's the other edge to that double-edged sword where also there were still an awful lot more people outfully hateful to your face than there are today. So it can't have been a fun thing to have to do.
No.
But this was on the money, and the audience definitely shared in Yvonne's discomfort.
Mm.
And it was funny, and it wasn't disrespectful.
No, not at all. And
I liked it. They disappear off upstairs to check out the bedroom. Yvonne and Gary get into a full-scale argument, effectively.
Yeah.
Calm yourselves. This isn't the time for this.
Oh, the house viewing.
You're doing a house viewing. Joe mentions that there's a small damp patch in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Which is room for Yvonne to get in. A pretty mean dig.
Just a big ha.
Quite a funny one, though.
Yeah, I like that.
And then Frederick and Gary make a connection over their shared love of blues music.
Mm.
Both do a bit of air guitar, uncomfortable air guitar.
That's what blues fans do.
Whenever two men are enjoying music together, they can't help themselves. There is the implication we're going to see these characters again.
Mm.
We don't. This is all very thrown away and we're never going to see them again. So off they pop. And then we find out that Gary had no idea that they were gay. Again, this was really nicely handled because you could see this being an eventuality that would happen.
Mm.
And yet, off the back of it, he wasn't. It's not like he was then repulsed or disappointed, but he was shocked in quite a realistic way.
And confused. Yvonne pointed out that you could tell because he had some sort of pink triangle.
He's wearing a pink triangle, which apparently was a gay pride symbol.
I know it is, but I didn't know that that was like regulation.
It's not regulation. Even in the 90s.
That's
the
impression that she gave.
Yeah, I don't even remember the pink triangle being a symbol that was worn. The idea of gay men needing to declare their sexuality in that way seems alien already. Here we are just 20 years on.
But I think maybe people in the 90s would have thought that could be a thing. Like when we talked about on Wikishuffle, if you go back a couple of episodes, about the handkerchief codes.
Mm-hmm.
And all the different handkerchiefs gay people, which I don't think is a thing, but maybe people did think it was back then.
It ties into the notion of it being some secret cabal, some secret society, and there being covert plans, which obviously is nonsense. So off they go. We're done with that now.
Yeah.
Again, it was just a fun bit.
Kept things moving and was nice and dealt with something, a 90s thing. He dealt with it in quite a good way.
And we showed the continued friction between Yvonne and Gary, and they look more sincerely unhappy with one another than they actually managed to achieve in the first series. Mm. Every so often in series one, Yvonne would flare up.
Yeah.
But normally with really good reason.
It seems to be the point where it's gone beyond that sort of fieriness to just, you just irritate me. And I don't have the passion in it to have a row with you. It's just...
And it should. When you've got two people that are arguing, they're not rooted in logic and making sensible and composed arguments. They're just pissed off with each other. And you get that feeling here that they're both right under each other's skin. In this throwaway comedy scene, they actually achieved that better than at any point they did in the first series. When they tried a bit harder at it, in this more relaxed setting, it worked better. Well done.
It makes me think... How long would you think Gary and Yvonne have been married for?
Yeah, we really don't know, do we?
It's never established. From conversations like this, I would think maybe a while.
They're young. But we know they met at work. People definitely got married younger. That was just an accepted thing, even 20 years ago.
People got married when they were like 19, 20. When I was 19, 20, there was no way I would marry anyone.
Nice to know that you thought that there were offers out there. That you were
People were queuing up.
19-year-old Chris was just turning down the ladies left, right, centre.
I was getting proposals daily.
And they did another thing to sort of normalise the fact that there are lots of gay people out there, which is great and it's a progressive thing to say and would have felt a lot more unusual in 1994 than it does today. Yvonne matter-of-factly points out that 20% of men in marriages are potentially bisexual, and that's an interesting point to make. Then pointing out that that's roughly the same number of people that vote Liberal Democrat.
Yeah.
Maybe in 1994. And we discover that Gary votes Lib Dem.
Yeah.
Now, this is the one of the main questions I now have. When we eventually get to speak to Gran and Marx about their decisions in the writing process, they obviously made the decision to make Gary a Liberal Democrat. In itself, not that unusual, except for the fact that we know what great big lefties Gran and Marx are.
Hmm.
And there are so many references to the Labour Party and things tied up with the Labour movement in the show, thematically and specifically, that it's an odd choice to then make him a Liberal Democrat. Hmm. And I would like to know what their thinking was there. I can't believe that it was just a throwaway gag, because there isn't really a throwaway gag there. There was no writer commentary for this episode. So for the first time, we're just basing all of our thoughts here on our own thoughts, and we haven't had any feedback from the writers from their DVD commentary. It would be interesting to know if there was a wider thought at play, because generally they are, I would say, much more sympathetic to Gary and admire him more than we do as viewers. So to then give him this characteristic which isn't reflective of what they consider to be good politics, and yeah, that's a bit reductive and simplistic to say, but they've still made that decision to give him this different political leaning, whether there was something wider at play there.
But we'll ask him.
Joke of the week.
Yeah, joke of the week.
I've had enough of this, I'm going out.
Well, what about dinner?
I'll get a Big Mac.
Oh, well, if you get caught for flashing, don't come running after me.
I like this one, this is a good one.
Another little one.
Yeah, it's all I needed. Short and sweet.
Heightened by the fact that you were eating a McDonald's while we watched it. Was it specific? Did you have a Big Mac?
No, I had a quarter pounder.
You had a quarter pounder. The joke wouldn't work in that case.
No, but my brain connected the dots anyway.
Being a vegetarian, I'm not sure I really know the difference between a quarter pounder and a Big Mac. Can you fill me in?
There's more in a Big Mac. It's like two quarter pounders in a different sauce. And there's a bit of bread in the middle.
It's got that weird three-layer bread bun thing going on.
I'm not a big fan of the Big Mac. That's not my personal preference. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't turn it down. But I wouldn't go out of my way to buy one.
Oh, and see, this is a world I'm not familiar with. My girlfriend and I went through a drive-thru the other day, and she wanted some chicken nuggets. I asked them for some McNuggets. That was her reaction. but that's what they're called on the menu. Menu says McNuggets.
No one asked for McNuggets.
Can I have some McNuggets? And she thought that I was the most embarrassing thing.
That is embarrassing, Phil.
I'm vegetarian. I don't understand
But the thing is, nobody knows that you're vegetarian. You'll just go, and especially if you are buying chicken nuggets, you go into McDonald's.
But if they're called chicken nuggets, why doesn't it say chicken nuggets on the menu?
Because McNuggets is stupid.
Well, then they shouldn't put McNuggets on the menu. I thought I was playing their game. I didn't know I was supposed to expect them to play our game.
Good day, sir. Could I have six of your finest McNuggets?
That's what I said. Those exact words. And apparently I conducted an enormous social faux pas.
Yes, you did. Oh, poor Karen. Sorry. Sorry for her.
So, if I was to order a Big Mac, am I supposed to just order a Big?
No, that's fine. You can have a Big Mac.
Oh, this is really confusing.
It's not.
So what, am I supposed to ask for a flurry?
You can ask for a McFlurry.
I can ask for a McFlurry.
You just can't ask for McNuggets.
McNuggets are out. I can't ask for McNuggets.
No.
Right.
Just think about the word. McNugget.
Well, obviously, McNugget. It's all stupid.
McNugget.
Yeah, but McFlurry's stupid as well.
No, McFlurry sounds fine.
Okay.
McNugget. It's not a thing. It's all right on paper.
Well, then why do they put it on the menu?
Because it's good on paper. You just don't say it out loud.
I said it out loud. I'm sorry. God, were they all laughing at me?
Yeah, they were. They were laughing at you.
I thought Karen was just being sensitive.
No, she was not.
So, chicken nuggets. I'll know
just
for next time.
Just say what they are. Chicken nuggets.
Can I have some reprocessed protein shit, please?
Better. Better than...
Now we're through the tunnel into 1941. It's difficult. We try not to sound like pervy old men making this podcast. But at the same time, it's difficult for me, and I'm pretty sure for Chris as well. I think I can speak for both of us here. Every time we first see Phoebe for the first time every episode, we get a little bit of loin growl.
I don't get a loin growl. I was going to say something nicer.
No, the terminology has been established.
Okay, we get loin growling. I was going to say that my mood lifts, but I suppose that works as well. It's just I always like seeing her on screen.
She just appears. She pops up. And she just looks lovely.
She just is lovely. She just, even this cold Phoebe that we were seeing now.
Oh, she's in a grump. Mm. She is definitely in a grump. And the grump is surprising to us, and it's surprising to Gary. If you remember...
Do you know something? Right, I'm going to be honest. In these last two episodes that we've watched, seeing grumpy Phoebe has made me a little bit sad because I feel like she's being grumpy with me.
Oh, you're taking it personally.
I am saying I've grown such an attachment to her that it's like, oh, Phoebe...
Come back.
I haven't felt like this for a long time about a television character. Not since Helen Baxendale died in Cold Feet. And I was very young, but I got really upset by that. It's the same level of feeling I've got. So if they suddenly killed off Phoebe, which I know they're not going to do, if they did, I would be devastated.
You feel as though Phoebe's been killed in a car crash because she's got a bit of a mood on.
I'm overreacting. But that's how I feel.
We first see her. She's wearing her... It isn't a fanny uniform because she's not in the fannies. But gives me an excuse to say fanny again. She's doing something to assist, but she's not a fanny. She's attempting to buy a blouse on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And along pops Gary. If we remember, at the end of the last episode, that was it. He was gone. He wasn't coming back again.
Which is, I feel like he's done a few times now.
Yes, he has. And so her being a bit perturbed and nonplussed about his reappearance perhaps makes a little bit more sense. Although we're a bit confused because when he left last time, and there's obviously been a bit of passage of time between episode one and episode two, so it's been a couple of months have passed, but she's still not expecting to see him. But when he left last time, if you remember, she gave him a kiss on a napkin and a full-on snog to remember her by. So she was very keen to see him again. And now she's gone cold fish.
Which is understandable because you can't do that to people. You can't just pop up 1 minute and go the next. People don't like that.
No.
I know they don't like that.
For good reason.
Phoebe also refers to Gary as a bad penny.
Keeps coming back. So this is very different. She's obviously got something else going on, although we're not quite sure at this stage what it is. Gary talks her out of buying the rayon blouse on the market.
It's rayon, what is that, cheap silk?
Rayon's like a man-made fibre. It's not very nice.
Well, silk is made by spiders.
Even more weird than that, silk's made by worms.
Silkworms, all right, okay.
Don't say that as if that's the most normal thing in the world. Yeah, of course it is. No, it's that obviously we just get worms to make our clothes for us. No, that's freaky.
So what do spiders make then?
We just accept this. Spiders make webs.
What do they manufacture?
Not so much in the manufacturing business.
Why have I been led to believe that they make stuff?
I'm not sure who did that. But
I just always thought they had jobs.
You think that spiders have jobs? This is a recurrent theme listeners of Wiki Shuffle will be familiar with. Chris has the utmost respect for animals with jobs.
Yeah, bees.
But we did not realise that spiders were in that category.
No, well, apparently they're not.
They make webs, but webs
have... For themselves.
They make those for selfish reasons.
Yeah.
As opposed to silkworms that are making their silk for us.
And bees that make the honey.
Sheep that
make the wool. Dogs that see stuff that people can't. And ghosts that smell cancer.
Ghosts that smell cancer.
Nope. I got my thing confused. My brain at that moment. Cats that smell cancer.
And cats that smell cancer.
Yeah, jobs. Spiders, I thought they had a job. They don't. Well, learn something.
So did you imagine that there were, like, spider farms?
Yeah, horrible, horrible spider farms.
There's not.
Were there silkworm farms then? Is there silkworm farms? Where does the silk come from? I know it comes from that worm. Someone's job must be to retrieve it from them. They don't deliver it.
How does it work?
How does it work? I thought spider farms...
Well, I'm not letting this go now. I want to know how this works. Oh, this is why people are listening to this podcast, yeah? Yeah? They want to understand how silk is made.
God, imagine working in the spider mines. Ooh.
Silk is a natural protein fibre, some forms of which can be woven into textiles.
Okay.
The best known silk is obtained from the cocoons of the larvae of the mulberry silkworm reared in captivity.
So it is farms.
Sericulture, or silk farming, is the rearing of silkworms for the production of silk. The caterpillar of the domesticated silk moth is the most widely used and intensively studied silkworm.
What do you think about it? It's quite gross.
It is pretty gross. So here's a picture of a silkworm, and it's cocoon, so that's the silk that you're taking, and then you presumably harvest those cocoons. Presumably, you have to then kill the moths to get this, so the silkworms are giving their life at this point. This isn't as if they're being milked. Does that make silk non-vegan? I hadn't really thought about that.
Maybe.
Wool isn't vegan, and honey isn't vegan.
See, you know, in my head, when it was spiders, I assumed it was just like they were milked.
The silk moth lays thousands of eggs. The silk moth eggs hatch to form larvae or caterpillars known as silkworms. The larvae feed on mulberry leaves. Having grown and molted several times, silkworm weaves a net to hold itself. It swings its head from side to side in a figure eight, distributing the saliva that will form silk. The silk solidifies when it contacts the air. The silkworm spins approximately 1 mile of filament and completely encloses itself in a cocoon in about 2 or 3 days. 2,500 silkworms are required to produce a pound of raw silk. The intact cocoons are boiled, killing the silkworm pupae.
Oh, there you go. Oh. I think maybe at some point in history, probably quite recently, someone said, do we need this?
Well, evidently that person was not Gary Sparrow.
No.
Because Gary, the reason that he talked her off of buying this rayon blouse is because he's bought presents with him.
Yep.
And that present is a real silk blouse.
He stole from his wife.
That it transpires later on was stolen from Yvonne.
So when he left the house, he saw this hanging up and just took it.
I like that.
He paid no attention. Didn't really think about it. Yep. Just took it. And then it was wrapped as well. So he went, bought some wrapping paper, sat in his van, wrapped it up.
Put a bow on it. It was quite well wrapped for man wrapping.
Put it all,
is it inherently sexist to say that men are bad at wrapping? I don't think so. The evidence backs that statement.
No, I have no idea how it works. So he gets all this stuff together, dons his outfit, and takes his stolen thing with the intention of giving it to Phoebe, who he hasn't seen for months. Because this makes up for the fact that he's not been around.
And let's not forget the main motive that has been established is that he wants to test whether his penis works. That's what we're really doing this for.
Science.
This is penile testing at work here. And this silk blouse is fucking horrible. It's a white, billowy, it looks like a clown costume. Whereas the rayon orange number that she was looking at the market looked quite nice. I mean, it might not have been, it wasn't made from dead moths, admittedly, but it looked as though it might have been flattering in some ways. This silk number, ugh.
Maybe that's what his penis needs. That's what gets him going, clowns.
Hi, girlfriend, I want you to dress up like my wife. That's another level I hadn't thought about. And it was Yvonne's best blouse as well. That's the thing. It's not as if he just found some old rag that she never wore anymore. It's the best thing.
I mean, she must have known. You know what your wife or girlfriend's favourite thing to wear is, surely.
Well, you or I might. But she's got wise. Phoebe has got wise. For the first time, she says, I know how your mind works. And
hooray.
We've known this for a while, is that you can just swan up and just shower me with gifts and everything will be fine. And you know what? That's bloody not all right.
It is sort of all right because she loves it when he does it.
It has been all right every time up until now. And even this time, she didn't exactly throw it back in his face.
But which makes sense. That's what you would do. But but I would be like, I know what you're doing, but I want the stuff. So, but I'm aware. You aren't fooling me. You're not doing sort of magic. It's not a trick. I get it.
So when his first trick of showering with gifts doesn't work, he falls back onto method number two, tried and tested method number two. I'll write you a song I haven't written.
But not a nice song. Not a romantic song. It's If You Leave Me Now.
An emotional blackmail song.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea, is it?
He goes to his piano and starts singing it. It's like,
borderline abuse.
It's that Love Actually thing with Andrew Lincoln and his cards.
That's so awful. It's just the worst.
The worst. I think that might be the worst scene in a film in the last 20 years. I would go as far as to say that. In terms of it's not funny bad. This is a scene in a serious film that they thought was a good idea, played out really badly. And as the years go by, it looks worse.
It's reprehensible.
That's what Gary did here. He did one of them. But again, she wasn't fooled. And she was distracted as well because a suitor came in.
Well, that's it. So he sits down to play this song on the piano, just assumes that she'll be following because that's the way their relationship works.
Oh, Gary.
But she doesn't because she's more interested in paying attention to Ludo.
Ludo, bonbon, oui.
What accent was that?
I was a bit of French.
I don't think he's French.
He sounds French. He's French.
No, I think he's Germanic in some way.
I think he's French. Let me look this up. Czechoslovakian. Yvonne is desperate to move house and have a baby. The pressure affects Gary's performance. In order to test his equipment, he goes back to visit Phoebe and finds she has a new admirer, a Czechoslovakian soldier named Ludo, or Robert, as he wishes to be known. Gary is insanely jealous. Okay. Remembering the rest.
So we've established that he's Czechoslovakian, although I don't remember that being mentioned in the episode. It makes more sense than French. Hmm. Ludo's got his eye on Phoebe, and it's fair to say it's being reciprocated. There is a reciprocated eye.
You notice the good camera shot?
When Gary first notices the frisson between them, it's in the mirror over the piano that he sees it. It was nicely done.
And he is green.
He doesn't take it well.
No, he doesn't.
Let's not mince words. He's a right knob end about the whole thing.
And I get it to a certain extent, because that is a difficult thing for him to deal with.
Maybe being a petulant child about it's not the best way to act, though.
No, it's not. And he definitely is doing that.
So he does all kinds of ridiculous things.
Well, he does what is unusual for Gary, because normally he does his bad stuff quite rationally and paced. In this scene, because of all the green he sees, he throws it all out at once and tries to do all his tricks all at the same time. It's like if Darren Bound dropped his magic box. He's seen all the illusions.
We get an avalanche of gift giving.
Yeah, all of them.
He just kind of...
This is like the emergency gift. This is like, oh, when shit's hit the fan, he may pull one out. They all fell out.
Yeah, he just gets his box.
Maxwell House!
He hasn't gone in any way to the trouble of packaging this in an appropriate way.
He makes them
it's
the
from
best.
America. Here's some steak from America.
So, Gary.
In a styrofoam tray that you will never have seen before in your lives.
Gary, what does this mean? It says on it, the 19th of 94, best before.
That's a recipe.
Not occurred to me that you will never have seen a barcode before. Or these labels are going to say very clearly written on them where they were manufactured, which is going to be somewhere in the UK. And try a bit.
But no. He's panicked.
Tea bag. They don't want to know what a tea bag... Are they going to know what a tea bag is?
What do they do before tea bags?
Loose tea.
Shut up.
Don't... Oh, you're such a millennial. You know what loose tea is.
The stuff that's in the bag.
Yeah.
You put that in.
Tea hasn't always come in a bag.
Like herbs.
Tea is hundreds of years old.
I know
tea
that.
Bags are not
I know
hundreds
that.
Of...
I just don't think about it, do I?
So you had loose leaf tea, so you'd get a tea strainer. You were aware of what a tea strainer is.
I've heard the word. I bet there's 50% of people listening to this will have fell on one side of this fence that we've made. There will be other people that are like, oh, it's an old thing, Phil does.
I feel like, please let me know, I feel like more than 50% are on my side of the fence here and don't think that tea is grown in bags.
I didn't say it was grown in bags, I just never thought about it. I just didn't know what they did.
When you start typing tea bag into Wikipedia, tea bagging comes up before tea bag, quite worrying.
Does.
Tea bag is a small, porous, sealed bag containing dried plant material. We know what tea bag is.
I know
Everyone
what tea
knows
is.
That. Let's look at the history. In China, during the Tang Dynasty of 618 to 907, paper was folded and sewn into square bags to preserve the flavour of
bags.
Tea.
There are bags there.
The first Western tea bags were hand-sewn fabric bags with tea bag patents dating as early as 1903.
It's always come in bags.
This isn't quite always, but the tea bag is older than I think I realised it was.
I win.
So I don't think she'd have been that shocked by a tea bag.
So... well done, Chris.
They first appeared commercially around 1904. Tea bags were successfully marketed by the tea and coffee shop merchant Thomas Sullivan from New York, who shipped his tea bags around the world. The loose tea was intended to be removed from the sample bags by customers, but they found it easier to brew the tea with the tea still enclosed in the porous bags. So it was an accident. The invention of the tea bag was an accident.
But so you're glossing over
an individual serving.
The point here.
That you're right and I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I don't think I was wrong.
No, I think you were. I think you were suggesting that Phoebe wouldn't have had tea bags.
I was questioning whether she would have done.
You were suggesting... No. You were suggesting that she didn't have tea bags, and I'm stupid millennial because I didn't know what happened before that. But there's no way I was able to know what they had before that because these were invented in, like, 1901, and there's no one as old as that except for you. I can't help it if I live a normal human life and I haven't been around for centuries.
I'm sorry. If it was a circular tea bag, then traditionally tea bags have been square or rectangular in shape. More recently, circular and tetrahedral bags have come on the market. So if it was a round bag or a pyramid bag, I think that a pyramid bag would have shocked Gary. I don't think he'd have seen a pyramid bag in 1994. Yeah, the pyramid bag wasn't invented until 1997.
Oh, something for him to look forward to.
Where were we? Gary's gone into meltdown. That's mm-hmm. where we are. Gary is melting down and throwing gifts. Biscuits, coffee, tea, steak, all coming out here out of his briefcase of emergency gifts. What else can I do? What else can I do to show how important and special I am? I know I've got lots of money on account of my money all being printed rather than earned. Drinks for everybody. Doesn't make eye contact with anybody in the pub to do this. Doesn't yeah. care about their reaction. He's a big dick about it. Yeah, but and he's clearly doing it just to show off. It's the emptiest of empty gestures.
He doesn't know. He doesn't understand why this isn't working because it's worked before. And he isn't doing it to be arrogant or showy offy. He's doing it because he thinks this is the key. This is how it works. CB even asks him at the end, like, oh, how much do I owe you?
Yeah, don't want to be. Doesn't want to be indebted to him. Yeah. And that's this is the first time that this has come up.
And it's broke his brain.
This is not how this works.
Yes.
I do this, I get your respect, and you fawn over me, and that's how I want it. It acknowledges the weakness of the first series where he was just doing that and she was just reacting that way.
It's that thing as well of being a friend to Gary Sparrow and being in a relationship with Gary Sparrow, and he wants the relationship end of it, and so does Phoebe, but he keeps disappearing. That she's like, no, you don't get both. It's one or the other. You have to stop doing this because it's not fair on me, and it's not fair on Reg.
No, poor Reg, he's very confused. Oh, and another thing that's happened while all this is going on, while Gary is lost in his normal ball of self-absorption, is once again, Reg has tried to fess up about the fact that his wife's having an affair with a Canadian airman, and Gary once again has completely ignored him. It's like, this is Reg, he's a nice guy. Give him 2 seconds of your time.
Really, in the 40s, that has been 100%. With him.
Honestly, I would do anything for him.
No sort of conflict. He's been like, don't worry about Gary. Don't worry about Gary. He'll be fine. Everything's fine.
And he does the same. He defends Gary here when he's having his little spat with Ludo.
Oh,
Reg
Gary's
comes
lovely.
Up
You're not
defends.
Just a little songwriter.
Yeah, he knows loads of stuff. He sort of defends his position as a spy and being valuable in the war effort, even though he's got no real evidence of that anyway. No. But he does that because he's Gary's mate. And Gary can't even afford him the 2 seconds to find out what's going on with his wife, which is just typical. So then Gary cottons on to the fact that Ludo might not be everything that he appears to be. He's very keen on getting his hands on Phoebe's money.
Yeah.
She's got 200 quid because her dad died, and he's very keen to get his hands on that money. And Gary smells a fish. Okay. Smells a rat.
Yeah. He didn't smell a fish.
No. Although, smelling a rat, what do rats smell of?
Oh, true.
Fish at least have got a smell associated with them. That would make more sense. But the idiom is smelling a rat, and that's what he did.
He did.
And he points this out and goes to the trouble of suggesting that he might have some money to invest as well. And Ludo's ears prick up at the thought of this. Ludo gets very defensive and doesn't want to give more information about this.
Because he's potentially a con man.
And it looks very clear that he is. Of course, he points this out to Phoebe.
So what's happened is Gary has found his target, the weak spot in his rival, and now he's going in for the kill to get rid of him.
And his expectations off the back of this, as Ludo scurries away, tail between his legs, his expectation is that Phoebe will be overjoyed that this scam has been exposed. And she's not.
She's annoyed.
She's annoyed.
She actually says, for the first time, she says she hates him. It's very quick and sort of off the cuff. But, like I said earlier, when she said that, that hurt me to my very core.
We've missed the bit where Phoebe asks why he keeps coming back. Mm. And Gary, in his flustered state, admits it's because I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than just melt at this, Phoebe says,
if I'm surplus to requirements, if I'm not wanted on voyage, if you want me to sling my hook,
well, why don't you? Why do you keep coming here?
Because I love you.
I wish you hadn't said that.
Don't you feel anything for me anymore?
I'd be lying if I said I didn't.
Well, then.
How can I rely on you? You're here, you're not here. You're a spy, you're a songwriter, you're divorced, you're married.
But there's no one else. You're the only one I can... With other women, there's no...
Gary, what are you talking about?
Look. A man and a woman get together, and before anything can happen, something has to happen. And when I'm with you, I only have to look at you and things happen. You know, even when nothing's happening, something happens. But with other women, even when everything's happening, nothing happens.
Oh, Gary, I'm sure that happens to every man at some time in his life.
Never happened to me.
For the first time, he's not getting an easy ride with Phoebe.
No, she's obviously, while he's been away, she's been mentally building up the barrier to prepare herself to deal with this, because she knows he'll come back, because he always comes back. But she doesn't want to do it anymore, so she's built the wall up. No more Gary. None of these shenanigans. And so when he says things like that, it's like, it's not a very strong wall.
Yeah, and rather than convince Phoebe that there are some reasons why she might love him also, we then go back to the realm of erectile dysfunction. I need you not because I love you, but because I want to find out whether my downstairs is functioning properly. Mm. That's not romantic. I'm not the king of romance.
No.
I would never proclaim to be.
But I know that that's not a line.
No. To follow up, I love you with, you're the only person that can excite me sexually. It's just creepy.
I need you to take part in my experiment.
It's effectively what's being said here. Then we get back to Ludo and the weak spots, the chink in his armour, which is the fact that he's actually a con man looking to get his hands on her money. She says something along the lines of, I know that, but I didn't want to know that. She liked what was being offered by this Ludo character and him showing some interest in her, and then huffs off. What way to react best to that?
Drink.
Booze. Give me some neat whiskey. Mm. At least the whiskey this week looks like whiskey.
Not piss.
It looked like elderflower cordial last week. It looked like whiskey this time.
Oh, yeah. But the hard stuff.
Reg is on side because Reg is a good friend, wants to get him drunk. He doesn't get a little bit drunk.
He gets super drunk.
Shit-faced.
Yep.
And wanders back through the portal.
Yeah, I imagine it must be difficult drunk. I'd throw up.
He looked on the verge of it, and it was good. It was played for laughs. It was played with a soundtrack over the top.
The drunk music.
The drunk music was played, which was a doleful harmonica version of Show Me the Way to Go Home.
Yeah, which is a song drunk people often sing.
I had a little drink about an hour ago, and it's gone right to my head. He's struggling, faltering all over the place, and he needs to get into his van. Already, alarm bells are starting to sound a little bit.
Yeah, this is starting to get a bit, oh, it was funny. It was funny, funny, funny. Now we're going, oh, Gary, no.
Attitudes towards drink driving in television and film drama are always strange. It is seen as completely inconsequential in American stuff.
Yeah.
Even now, nobody really cares about it. Generally, we're a bit more responsible about it in
the
UK.
I have some personal things for this. Since I've only been driving for like 6-7 months, I have to stop doing things now because I have to drive somewhere. But I've never noticed it before in TV and film. People just go out. No one says, oh, but who's driving?
It's played for laughs to begin with. He can't get into the car. He ends up smashing the van window.
Yeah, he uses some sort of X-Men power. Just puts his hands against the window and it shatters. I don't know if he's a mutant, but he's a mutant. Time travel, maybe. So he smashes the window, gets into his car.
Sets the alarm off.
Sets the alarm off.
Deals with the alarm by just tearing some wires out the bottom of the car.
Like Hulk.
Tells the wires to shush. I liked that bit. That made me laugh. And then next thing, along comes the Reg of 1994 and has spotted that Gary might be a little bit inebriated.
He's a very nice policeman, though. He says to him, as he's sitting in his car, he doesn't say anything about it until Gary puts the key in the ignition. And then he says, oh, I wish he didn't do that. Which I imagine policemen would do.
I'm not sure in the real world whether, because he's not actually driven off, whether he'd have been obliged to have stopped it from getting to that point, just from the paperwork perspective, you know, I can prevent this rather than having to react to it. But Gary does put his keys in the ignition and make to drive off. And let's be clear, he had every intention of driving off. Yeah. There is no question that that's what was going to happen next. Gary was very much in the wrong here. And Reg is right to pull it out and says, I wish you hadn't done that. I've got no choice now but to treat you as drunk in charge and arrest him. Let's him make a phone call.
Cool phone.
Gary's got a mobile phone. It's in 1994 on a TV repairman salary. That's quite a thing.
Maybe he came with a car.
Might be a company thing, or he may have. He's had trouble with phone boxes before, so maybe he's learned that and thought, I really need a phone. So gives Yvonne a call. Oh, we missed the bit where Yvonne discovered that the blouse was gone, and there was the implication in Yvonne's tone that she thought that Gary had stolen the blouse for wearing himself.
Mm. Yeah.
And then when Gary...
If you're Yvonne, who knows? Like, oh, Gary, who knows? Maybe it is cross-dressing. Because it's not going to be an affair. It's, in her mind, that's the very last thing. There's more chance of him being a cross-dresser than it is of him having an affair. And then in her mind, that's her opinion of Gary. It's for Ron. They've got some sort of weird game that they do on their riverboat. I don't know.
That's possible.
It's weird enough in itself that he has to explain to his wife that him and his friend are going to sit on a boat and have a little date. That story's going to have to come up at some point.
When he then phones her up and says he's been arrested, she immediately assumes that it's got something to do with the blouse.
Caught.
I can't imagine what crime that could be. What cross-dressing blouse-related crime she thinks he might have committed. He doesn't actually say that he's been done for drink driving, just that he's been arrested and he's going to be a while. Off he goes with Reg, waiting to say, Actually, officer, I haven't had a drink for 53 years. You're not really giving this the gravitas that it deserves.
No.
You don't seem particularly repentant about what you were about to do.
It's a shame. It's a shame to end the episodes with Gary being annoying in that way.
We're getting to see Gary's weaknesses writ large and front and centre of... He gets incredibly jealous. He doesn't know how to respond. He can only react to that by getting drunk. And then the consequences of that, he doesn't know how to deal with those either. It all makes sense. It all fits this character. Gary Sparrow is nothing if not consistent. And end episode.
Good though. My favourite so far.
I felt it absolutely flew along. It felt like it was over before it even begun because we'd had so much fun on all of the scenes, felt well constructed. Story-wise, there wasn't really that much story in there, but it didn't matter because the characterisation was also good. I loved the Phoebe that we got to see, even though it did hurt Chris's feelings.
It did.
I'm sorry that you were
I hope it gets better, and I'm sure it will.
And there ends episode 2 on a little bit of a cliffhanger. Knowing what's coming in the next episode, we've definitely got a lot more serialised in the way that the story's being told. Mm-hmm. We've touched on this before, how this was an unusual thing for sitcoms to do, to serialise their storyline in this way rather than be self-contained blocks of comedy scenarios. And yeah, we're definitely getting this because we're ending on a cliffhanger that will be resolved in next week's episode.
Right.
Please do get in touch. Let us know what you think about the show, anything you'd like us to talk about, anything you think we've gone wrong, if we're being too harsh on Gary and you want to stick up for him a bit, let us know. Any other ideas you might have for features or things that we can stick in the show, please get in touch. As I say, we will be moving to a fortnightly release for episodes
but
moving forward.
We're still releasing something every week. It's just one of those things is Wiki Shuffle.
Yes. So go and listen to Wiki Shuffle. We think you'll enjoy it, or at least we hope so. And we will... See you again in 2 weeks' time.
Yes. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Good Night Sweetcast is a Wiki Shuffle podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter at GNSCast, or find out more at goodnightsweetcast.com.